670 The Score's Mullin Haw is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he's here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullin Haw Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
Early September. So
this is not good.
Oh, no.
Here comes the training staff, Joe Espada and Josh Miller, after Luis Garcia just delivered that last pitch to Clement.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
That's it for Luis. And that's so frustrating. He's had so many setbacks over the last 2 years. And his second start back, he is going to leave the mound here in the second inning. Unfortunate.
Oh, man.
It has been a tough road back.
Seriously. And as good as he looks to start this game, too.
Kimbrel looking for a strikeout here. Ground ball, knocked down by Walker. No chance to get Straw. Ball game over. Blue Jays tie it with two in the bottom half of the ninth. And walk it off with a Tyler Heineman fielder's choice, 4-3. A very tough loss any time of the year, but especially with 18 games to go. The Astros used a lot of bullets out of their bullpen tonight. And they dropped this game to the Blue Jays in walk-off fashion, 4-3.
Yeah, bad night all the way around, man. Bad night at the beginning with Luis Garcia going out, and bad night at the end with Brian Abreu coughing up the save, and the Astros lose 4-3 in 10 innings last night. And to make it worse, the Mariners, as I look it up here, 5-3 over the Cardinals. So the lead is down to one game. Good morning, sir.
Why are we talking about old stuff, Sean?
How are you doing?
Move forward. That's
No, it's been 8 hours.
I don't know why you're so wrapped up in this loss last night. Especially when there's something about the Blue Jays, about all of the weird connections the Astros have had through the years, whether it's Gavin Biggio or George Springer's not a weird connection, but he does damage last night. But Miles Straw scoring the winning run. I'd like to be happy that Miles Straw is still kicking around the league.
Yeah.
But no. I got to have Miles Straw score the winning run in extra innings.
Yeah, and last night, like in the ninth inning last night, when after the game was tied, and Springer comes up, when Abreu's in there, and Abreu struck out Springer, they're like, all right, now Miles Straw's up. I'm like, is this just a parade of former Astro center field? Are we going to get Richard Hidalgo batting after Miles Straw
Is this the Canadians just in their tariff battle trying to stick it to us?
If you stick Mariznick out there after Straw, it's just a parade of former Astro center fielders from the golden era.
What the hell, man?
Yeah.
What the hell? Okay, so they had a committee no-hitter going, partly because as you heard, if you're just waking up and you didn't realize that there's an Astros... Yeah, it's true, everybody. There's an Astros pitcher who has elbow discomfort and inflammation
This one is really sad. I mean, the other ones I feel bad for. You know, Caleb Ort got hit with it. Spencer Arrighetti got hit with it last week. Like, this truly feels like one of those there's something going around the clubhouse situations. Like, when there's a flu that runs it burns its way through a locker room, this is what it feels like right now. This one... This one I felt awful about because Luis Garcia took 28 months to get back to the big leagues, and it's the second inning of his second start. And, man, I credit him for holding it together walking off the field. I would have been a mess walking off the field if I were him.
The one thing about so many of the elbow injuries you realize is that a torn UCL isn't always a dramatic thing necessarily. And I'm not saying there's no news that that's what it is, everybody. Mm-hmm. But we've just seen where, there's inflammation, and then the imaging either confirms it, or sometimes the imaging's too blurry. We have to wait a little while. It's that it's not always just – it's not like when you tear your ACL and you usually know right away, that's it. So who knows what it is, and maybe it's just a brief setback or something, but his velo was down. I I didn't see when he left the game. I was out of the room when he left the game. And my first thought when I heard Brandy yell was, everyone break down in tears, was maybe it was something when that ball had caromed off his glove.
Yeah.
Maybe it hurt his non-throwing hand or something, but obviously it wasn't that.
No, that's what I was hoping for, too. I kind of was part paying attention to my computer, part the TV when he's walking off. So I did the rewind thing, and I'm looking, I'm hoping like he grabbed his hamstring or something like that. You want anything but an elbow. And
I was hoping that, I was hoping a sparrow had bit him in the gonads
or something. Man. Yeah, anything but the elbow, and it was the elbow. And here's the thing now, if we can detach ourselves emotionally from the personal part of this with Luis Garcia, is we heard Todd Callis say it in that highlight that we played. By the way, credit Todd Callis, Jeff Blum, Space City Home Network, that we're down to 18 games. Like any of these guys that leave the mound with any sort of anything, they're off the list to help you for the rest of the regular season. You know, we are getting down to it now. I guess the one bright spot, two bright spots in this game last night was Carlos Correa hit a home run. That was good to see. He continues to hit the ball pretty well. AJ Blueball. And I saw, I think, Chandler Rome tweet, hey, man, he might deserve to get a shot here in the starting rotation. And I don't disagree. He might deserve to get a shot in the starting rotation because he is a human warm body that has started games before. Like, it ain't going to be about deserve pretty soon. It's going to be about who has started games before for this.
No, these are like military promotions during a war.
Yes.
It's like, hey, congratulations, you're a colonel.
Yes.
But, sir, I'm a sergeant. I'm like, yeah, it was a rough day yesterday. So, that's what it feels like.
Yeah,
not exactly like it. Don't. I'm not doing that.
No. But, he was great. Blue ball.
No, he is. Yeah, and he's been really, really good. Yeah. And he might not, this is a team right now that I honestly, I don't know what to do now. I feel like I've gotten down to the end of the season and they've just been bludgeoned so incredibly hard, like all season. This feels like a Rocky movie, Sean.
Yeah, it does.
They just keep taking all these hits. The physical hits, the legitimately not even metaphorical, just they're getting beaten down, and yet they've got a one-game lead in the division. If the offense, if they could just hit, were they 1-for-11 with runners in scoring position last night?
I'm looking it up right now. I'm looking it up right now.
They have 11 hits last night,
and you
can't get any more production than 3 runs out of that, and it's just over and over and over again.
They left 10 on base, and they were that's Toronto. Oh, Toronto was crappy with runners in scoring. The Astros left 11 on base and were 2-for-11 with runners in scoring position. So one something.
Sorry,
I
overstated the misery. They're actually twice as good as 1-for-11.
Yeah, what the hell, man?
They were twice as good as I said they were.
Get your facts straight, dude. All right?
They're 2-for-11 with runners in scoring position. That's the part that's the one hope right now. If they're going to continue to lose players once every 3 games, at some point this has got to click, does it not, Sean?
You would think so.
Does it not have to click at some point?
The runners in scoring position thing, is that like turnovers in football where there's a regression to the mean? Like at some point, good hitters, and I do think they've got a bunch of good hitters in the lineup, like empirically talented good hitters in the lineup, they just don't get hits when there's runners on second and third or the bases loaded or anything like that.
As Adam Spillane pointed out last night, just to pile on to the misery and the weirdness of this entire situation, the Astros are paying Jose Altuve, Christian Walker, Jose Abreu, and Lance McCullers Jr. a combined $90.2 million this season. Entering tonight's game, those 4 players have combined to accumulate a -0.5 BWAR.
For the season, wow,
yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
Wow. Well, the good news is Jose Abreu is not a negative number on that. He's just a 0 on that. Jose Abreu, because he's playing in Santo Domingo or something right now. He's
he didn't even throw him in there.
No, he did.
Oh, no,
he
Jose
said
Abreu,
Jose Abreu.
He did. Yeah, sorry. No, sorry. I was thinking about Vlad Guerrero Jr. And how he became Altuve's pappy last night.
Yeah.
Altuve's running to third. It was a hard hit to Vlad. Vlad made
the
a
right
nice
side
throw.
Of the infield. Altuve was the ghost runner in the 10th inning.
Yeah. Your first instinct is, Altuve, what the hell are you doing? But that's a good play by Vlad. But then Altuve takes his time, trying to throw Vlad Guerrero Jr. out in the next half inning and fails.
And
Vlad gets on base.
The worst part about the Altuve base running wasn't the actual, you know, gaffe itself. And I don't know if it was a gaffe. Ball gets hit to the right side. You're trying to get to third. He was out by so much that his slide looked like a six-year-old who just was taught how to slide. Little League, like
it looked like. I guess I should slide here.
I can't try to run around him. He wasn't even near the base. Like he's like,
yeah.
Do I try to knock the ball out with my cleats here? What do I do? I'm 35 years old. Whatever. I'm gonna put in the effort. I guess
that would have been awful if he went spikes high 10 feet away from
the
base.
Hell yeah, man! Need these wins. So the margin is one game now in the AL West. The Mariners, who are hot all of a sudden, they've won, I think, five in a row. They're one back. And the Rangers are nipping at their heels. The Rangers are 2.5 back.
As I sent this text to you this morning because I knew I didn't want you to think that I was going to jump all over you with some kind of irrational accusations about Brian Abreu. Because Ben Verlander... So, I almost said son of Justin Verlander. Feels like it sometimes. Brother of Justin Verlander tweeted out, Brian Abreu might be the best eighth inning guy in the league and the worst ninth inning guy in the league. Yeah. Truly astounding.
It is. I haven't gone and looked up his numbers. Three of his last four starts, he's given up at least two earned runs. And it's been bad. Like last night was not there was nothing fluky about it. He's walking guys. He's getting behind on hitters. The contact was hard. I tweeted this, Seth, after the ninth inning last night, before the game was over, after Abreu had just given up two runs to tie the game. I said, before I read this, you know how much I dislike Craig Kimbrell just based on his stupid dangly arm thing that he does.
Yeah.
Sports hate, people. Sports hate. I wrote, I can't believe I'm typing these words, but the Astros should really think about using Kimbrell as their closer and sliding Abreu back to the eighth. And I said, wow, that hurt to type. but Kimbrell has not given up. He gave up the run last night, but it was unearned. It was the extra inning second base guy that came in. And he got a big strikeout when he needed it. To your point, the one hit that they got was an infield hit where, you know, Altuve couldn't throw out Guerrero. And the game-winning play was a ground ball to first base. Like, Kimbrell's been good since he became an Astro. And he's closed before. This isn't me just cherry-picking some reliever who's got a good ERA over the last 2 weeks and say, put that... Like, somebody... I saw somebody reply to that tweet. Nah, I'd put Brian King in there. Are you kidding me? Are you serious? Kimbrell is like, third all-time in saves or something. He's, like, top five in saves. There is a difference between pitching the eighth and the ninth inning. I have come to that conclusion watching Brian Abreu operate.
There's a psychological thing going on there. So as of, I don't know if this has been updated for last night or not, but 16 innings pitched in the ninth inning for Brian Abreu, 8.16 ERA.
Yeah, yeah. And a
as
lot
opposed
of that's
to a 0.57 ERA in the eighth inning.
Yeah, it's 0.57 in the eighth inning?
That can't be right.
No, it can be. It absolutely because his ERA is still in the twos.
I remember it was a sub one, but I didn't remember it was. Anyway, regardless, in the ninth inning, 8.16 ERA.
Yeah,
he's atrocious as a closer. You're right. I was wrong. I was wrong to feel confident in him and think that I tried to. I'm very, very guilty of saying like, it's not that big a deal. Whatever.
For him, it is. Yeah.
So far, it most certainly has.
For him, it is. No question. All right. So the Astros lose last night. All right. Let's get some updates in the next segment on the Texans and their injury issues. DeMeco Ryans met with the media yesterday. He also addressed the lollygagging that C.J. Stroud talked about. We'll get to that in the next segment as well. Hey, today is a big day at the station here. We're trying to get new books into the hands of kids in low-income homes. 79% of Houston kids fall into that category. 61% of Houston kids don't have a single book in their house. You guys know, if you listen for a while, once a year we make this effort to support the Barbara Bush Houston Literacy Foundation. We pick that one day a year. We support them all year long, but this is the day we go after it hard and heavy. A $30 donation gives one child in Houston their own home library. That's six new books of their own. It's really easy to donate. And a $30 donation, again, gives a kid an entire home library. Text NEWBOOKS to 41444. That's all one word, new books, to 41444 today to donate and help us help Houston kids. All the donations in Morning Drive today are matched by Reliant, up to $10,000.
670 The Score's Mullen Haw is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he's here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullen Haw Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
Just start off just the injury update. Stan Stover hurt his foot, so he'll miss some time. Really hate that. He's playing tough, physical, exactly how we want it done. So he'll miss some time, so we'll have to, you know, upgrade our tight end room from that perspective. Andrews rolled his ankle, so he'll be day-to-day, see how that goes. Berrios and Kirk are doing well on their recovery. We'll see how they go this week. No timetable set right now for those guys.
All right, so tomorrow will be a big injury report for the Texans. It doesn't sound like Jake Andrews is going to come back anytime soon. It said day-to-day, but a high ankle sprain for an interior offensive lineman. I would guess Jarrett Patterson's going to start on Monday against the Bucs. The wide receivers, we'll see. Stover is the big one. We've not seen anything about anybody going on IR yet, and I think that'll be a tell. You know, it sounds like Stover's going to be back at some point, Seth. I guess the question would be if it's going to be more than 4 weeks, and they've only got him and Schultz on the roster. I mean, they're going to need to add a tight end to the roster just to get a warm body on there.
Yeah.
Then does Stover end up going on to the IR? I would say if he doesn't, that's probably a pretty good sign, but I feel safe to say, you know, like Stover and Andrews, if we're just going to talk about Monday and the Bucks this week, I would expect both of them obviously to be out. So that's the injury update from
Nico. Yeah, so the big thing with Stover is, all right, you're down to one tight end on the roster. Yeah. They're going to have to either elevate somebody from the practice squad or they're going to have to trade for somebody.
Yep.
And I guess right now, Luke Lachey, I don't think, brings as much as a blocker as Harrison Bryant would. And, you know, we know that, Dalton Schultz doesn't bring a whole lot as a blocker either. So I'm guessing Harrison Bryant will be the call-up. Or they end up going out and find somebody elsewhere, whoever's out there that's available in the league at large.
Yeah, Caserio was on Texans All Access. Nick Caserio on Texans All Access last night and was asked about the tight end position.
Fortunately, that's just part of football, so we're going through it. Other teams are going through it, so that was a strength going into the year. So we've lost some players that we felt were going to help us, but nothing we really do about it other than try to come up with a solution. We've talked about this, kind of have some of our depth off the roster, whether it's internally or if there's a player externally on another practice squad or under the roster or on the street that might be able to come in and give us some snaps. So we'll look at everything and try to do what we feel makes the most sense.
And we should point out that, you know, he's talking about the year at large. They lost Brevin Jordan to a torn ACL in camp and Irv Smith to whatever he's on the IR for. I don't recall what it is. So it's like they dropped a bomb in that tight end room and the only guy standing is Dalton Schultz.
That's funny. I was texting back and forth with a friend of mine who just kind of casually checks in on the Texans, and yesterday he was like, didn't they already lose their other good tight end? And I was like, wait, you mean Irv Smith? And he's like, no, the athletic Brevin one. Jordan. I was like, oh, yeah, Brevin Jordan. That feels like forever ago.
Yeah.
That was actually 3 weeks ago?
It was like 3 weeks ago, yeah.
It feels like forever ago.
Yes.
And because I can't keep up with all the Astros injuries and now the Texans injuries. If there's a – this could be a bright side. This could be a bad side. The Texans didn't have a great offensive performance, obviously, last week. But they also – they ran 11 personnel, 3 wide receiver sets, the most in the league, which is a little bit of a surprise to me because before I went back and just watched everything, there were a lot of condensed formations where everything's all right down at the line of scrimmage, but there's a lot of wide receivers. I didn't realize quite how heavily 3 wide receivers they'd been. So if the answer was going to be, hey, we need to be in more 2 tight end sets, that's probably not going to happen this week. It's got to hopefully be that Jalen Noel comes along a little bit, but that also maybe Christian Kirk or Braxton Berrios come back.
Dude, what if they just spread it out? What if they just said, you know what? 4 wide, this is the homage to the run and shoot Oilers, the 35-year anniversary or whatever, and we're going to just spread them out 4 wide. Nobody's expecting it, Seth. Let's do this. We only got one tight end on the roster. And by God, he's a pass-catching tight end.
I mean, it doesn't have to be that dramatic. You just have to line up with guys out wide. It doesn't have to be, you know, run and shoot or whatever. So I think the big question is they're probably the pass protection wasn't as bad as I was afraid it was when I went back and rewatched. But there's still questions, obviously.
Yep.
And the more you just leave those guys naked out there, you're also leaving C.J. Stroud naked. And they had, you know, they had enough glitches in pass protection that I worry about unblocked defenders getting to C.J. Mm-hmm. The one sack that he took with the unblocked defender off the edge, I mean, I think classic rookie scenario where I think the hot route just didn't get his eyes back on on CJ quickly enough that mm-hmm. you gotta that when you see that the guy is blitzing to your side, you gotta really be sure you get your eyes on the quarterback. And CJ's sitting there, and I think CJ was aware that it was a blitz. He just there was nobody to throw it to right then.
Is that Higgins? That was Higgins on that play.
Yeah. I just wanted to double check.
Yeah,
but that's the part that, okay, do those guys, do they grow up that fast, that quickly?
Yep.
Do they get to the point where, no, that was Noel. Sorry, that was Noel.
It was Noel,
Noel.
Okay. It was Noel, gotcha.
It was Noel on that. Like, that's where Christian Kirk would have been better in that situation.
Yep.
And that sack is on, I'm guessing, the wide receiver on that more than anybody else.
Last one from D'Amico on injuries. This is D'Amico on Patterson filling in for Jake Andrews.
Yeah, Patterson has done a nice job. Patterson's played a lot of ball for us. He filled in last year. He stepped in wherever guard, center. Patterson's going to give you everything he has. And that's all we expect from him. And I'm encouraged at how he plays.
Yeah, when Jake Andrews went out, I felt bad for Jake Andrews. You know, he's been waiting to get a chance, and he's finally the starting week one center for an NFL team, one where he's got good alignment with the coaching staff and everything else. I don't feel like there's a major drop off between Jake. Like, I'm fine with Jarrett Patterson filling in for Jake Andrews. Either one is going to struggle against Vita Vea on Monday night, Seth.
And it's, you know, Jake Andrews. That sack that Ross Tucker and I disagree, I think, on that sack that CJ took where he could have stepped up in the pocket, but also Jake Andrews got beat. That was the one that Ross had thought was wondering what Titus Howard was doing.
Yeah.
Like, Titus Howard was executing the play action. So, like, he's double teaming the defensive tackle. Jake Andrews has a body come across him, and he's in a position to pin him against Titus Howard, and he just wasn't able to get his hands up and do it. But then Jarrett Patterson later didn't do a great job picking up a game. Both of them are going to have issues. That's the one positive from the game, I think, is that they did let up a lot of pressure, but it wasn't immediate pressure the way it was last year as often. And when it was immediate pressure, a lot of times it was like that sack we talked about that CJ took with the blitz, and that one's on the wide receiver more than anything else. It's all stuff that's the miscommunications and CJ setting the wrong, you know, setting the protection wrong a couple times. Like, all that, you can fix that, and I think they can fix it pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. There's simply, right now at least, I don't feel good about some of those guys in pass protection individually. Ariante Irisri is still a rookie. He's got to figure it out. You know, he'll hopefully continue to get better. The centers, that's going to be a focal point.
Here was C.J. Stroud after the game on Sunday, talking about, especially at the very end here, talking about the pace of the offense and the offense lollygagging and going through the motions.
Yeah, I take just negative plays. I think it's kind of obvious. You know, we can't shoot ourselves in the foot consistently and expect to win. And that starts with me, you know, with a lot of different things. I got to get rid of the ball better and, you know, use my legs maybe a little more. But, I think, you know, there's a lot of hope still. We did a lot of good things. You know, it's a really good defense, a really good team. But I definitely think we could have won. But just you can shoulda, woulda, coulda all day. We didn't deserve to win that game because we didn't do the right things. So when you come out NFL lollygagging and, you know, not going through the motions, that kind of happens. So I think we'll be all right. But I think it's a good wake up call for us.
All right. So then yesterday, D'Amico Ryan's follow up was asked about the lollygagging comment from C.J. Stroud.
Yeah, it's never an entire group. That's the one thing about it. So there are individuals that have their moments throughout the week, and the lollygagging, it's a term everybody want to use now. It's for me, it's just our tempo, right, in and out of the huddle, right? We got to get in and out of the huddle quicker so we can get to the line of scrimmage so we can operate and make sure we got checks and things we have to make at the line of scrimmage. Well, to make those checks in the proper manner, right, we got to get out with some urgency. So the urgency piece from everybody has to pick up from the offensive side of the ball, right? The urgency picks up, and we'll be able to operate cleaner when it comes to pre-snap and post-snap.
Okay, so this is where I had a flashback. And real quick, by the way, I was mixing plays up in my head. I don't put that sack on Jaden Higgins. I think CJ's got to know that where the blitz is coming from.
Okay.
And probably hit Nico. I'll check with Cecil Shorts later today. As far as the lollygagging, the sense of urgency, immediately, I think the knee-jerk reaction is like, what the hell are these guys being lazy about? I think that there's sometimes, whether it's rookies or guys that are new in a system, that until you get into game situations or see it done the right way, you don't really understand exactly what the tempo needs to be. And I had a flashback to when Ryan Fitzpatrick was benched for Ryan Mallett. And Ryan Fitzpatrick's a better quarterback than Ryan Mallett was. And yet, when Ryan Mallett went in the game, because he had been in New England, he knew exactly what tempo Bill O'Brien wanted and how the offense was supposed to be operated. And Ryan Fitzpatrick said after that, you know, when he came back after they made him the starter again, that like, yeah, it was good for me to watch and see that. And I kind of understood, oh, okay, this is what you want. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't excuse them not having the proper tempo in week one. And D'Amico accepted responsibility for that yesterday. But like, do you fix it by week two?
Yeah.
That's another thing. That's one of the on the list of fixable things. I think that's one of the things that's very fixable, and that guys got beat up a little bit, and they see that they've got that negative reinforcement going to get that fixed this week.
Yeah, I can tell you, just like, you know, it's like I hear that comment from D'Amico, and knowing that that was a focal point in training camp, especially with CJ now being in control of everything. It was like, man, we got to get out of the huddle quick. We've got to give him plenty of time to survey the field. I mean, we were tracking it during the preseason game, Seth. Like, okay, how much time is left on the play clock? I'm like writing it down in my notes each snap. Like, oh, that had 16 seconds left. They had 14 seconds left. And then after week one to come out and go, yeah, we just got to get out of the huddle quicker. Like, that to me as a non-player, like that, I hear that and I'm like, that's infuriating to me. Like,
no, it is. I think it speaks to the fact that this is the way teams treat the preseason anymore, that you don't get anything close to an actual game-like
right.
scenario or situation.
Yeah.
And I haven't checked the numbers to see what whether offenses were behind the defenses yet or not again this year or whatever. But I think the more that teams continue to treat the preseason like just a bunch of glorified practices, that's what you're going to get at times. So the challenge is for D'Amico next year going into the season opener. Wait a minute. All right, I know we do a lot of situational football and everything, but on the road in L.A. versus a good defense, it wasn't that we weren't ready for that. It's got to be better. And obviously, you know it's got to be better this week. You get the benefit of playing at home. But year in and year out, man, you get 17 games, and all these offenses are just – I don't get it. I don't look
throwing away games at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, the way training camp used to be done was stupid, but the way they're doing it now, I feel like everybody's a slave to the GPS monitors to an extent where just you're not getting the work you need to get done.
Yeah,
there's something to be said for grumpy old man here. You can't be in pristine physical environments all the time.
Right.
You create soft athletes because everybody's only practicing when everything's just right and I've hit certain numbers on the GPS and everything. It's a team sport, man.
Yep.
And somebody's just got to get the cogs out there so you can get the machine working right.
I don't know.
Play a damn preseason game every now and then.
Yeah, no, that would be good. I don't know if the offenses were ahead of the defenses this week. I mean, there were plenty of really good offensive performances this weekend that we saw. I do know the Texans are the only team that allowed 14 points or fewer that lost their game this weekend.
Uh-huh.
You know, they all the other teams that allowed 14 points or fewer all won their games. So The Texans are certainly behind offensively of those teams that had good defensive performances.
Yeah, that's weekend. Right. I don't give a damn what the rest of the league is doing. The Texans, for one, if they just if they get better, they did a great job driving the field several times in the first half. You just got to hem up some of these things. There's so many fixable things with the offense right now. I'm still going to have concerns about a lot of the young guys and. There's going to be kinks as CJ figures out this system. CJ told us that during the preseason. It's not going to be a smooth process. There's going to be setbacks along the way when you're trying to do all these things differently. But it is all realistically fixable stuff as long as Nick Caley knows what he's doing.
All right, Football Talk on Sports Radio 610 is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Stream your local NFL game live every Sunday, all season long, starting at just $30 for your first year. That's like $250 a month. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Headlines are up next.
670 The Score's Mullin Haw is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he's here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullin Haw Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
Kimbrel looking for a strikeout here. Ground ball knocked down by Walker. No chance to get Straw. Ball game over. Blue Jays tie it with two in the bottom half of the ninth and walk it off with a Tyler Heineman fielder's choice, 4-3. A very tough loss any time of the year, but especially with 18 games to go, the Astros used a lot of bullets out of their bullpen tonight, and they dropped this game to the Blue Jays in walk-off fashion, 4-3.
Yeah, that might have been the worst loss of the season last night when you consider the totality of the damage done, Seth. Another blown save for Brian Abreu in just horrific fashion. They lose in extra innings. Luis Garcia. Like, of all these guys that are coming back from this Tommy John, there's a horrible power ranking, but if I could have power ranked them in order of the ones I least wanted to have a setback, just based on how long it's been and how many setbacks he's had, like, this is the saddest out of all of them, is Luis Garcia. And oh, by the way, you go to bed and you wake up and the Mariners had beat the Cardinals last night, too. So now you're down to one game. Like, that was a bad night last night, man.
Is it possible, Sean? Let's just think, abstractly here. The Astros are so advanced in so many ways when it comes to the sport of baseball. Is it possible at all that somehow the one area they've been left behind is in either diagnosis, treatment, whatever it might be? I mean, it's just been, it's Tommy John after Tommy John. And to be clear, nobody knows exactly what's wrong with Luis Garcia's elbow right this moment.
Right.
But it can't be, right? It can't. It's just got to be random bad luck.
You're only talking about the pitchers right now. Add in Kyle Tucker's shin from last year, Yordan Alvarez's up and down issue with his hand. And Yordan, by the way, we should mention Yordan has been fantastic. Since he's come back, he was on base again a few times last night. He's been great. Jake Myers running out to go play center field and then just his calf going out. If what you asked, is it possible that this completely advanced organization has one Achilles heel and it's medical? If it's not possible, then this is the worst luck I've ever seen with a team that I've rooted for, ever.
As far as, this is from an article last year, so the factor in whichever UCL injuries have been since then. The teams that have had the most Tommy John surgeries in the last four seasons, this is in 2024, was the Angels, the Marlins, the Pirates, and the A's.
Okay.
So the Astros aren't there. At the very least, I guess it would be the recovery from the Tommy John surgeries and all of the setbacks that they've had and all of that. I don't know.
And the last, if you snip it down to the last three seasons, 23, 24, 25, I mean, you had Urquidy and Luis Garcia a couple of years ago. You had Javier. Maybe Urquidy was last year. I'm losing track. But if I'm just listing the names, it's Urquidy, it's Javier, it's Luis Garcia. It's this year alone, it's Ronel Blanco and Hayden Wisniewski within a week of each other earlier in the season. It's crazy. And now it's these guys coming back. Look, Spencer Arrighetti's on the elbow list now. You know, like he's, you know, it's not Tommy John, but he's on the elbow. Caleb Ort over the weekend, elbow. Like it is crazy. It is something. I'll say this. If I were the owner of the baseball team, this is something where I'm pulling everybody that has anything to do with medical and anything to do with pitching, both. How we handle the pitchers, how we handle the medical. And it's probably, it's in season now, so I'm not doing it right now. But with the day after the season is over, the day after, I'm pulling all these people into a room and going, what the hell is going on here?
Well, one of the things that Channy Pooh will point out at times is that that when James Click was fired a week or two prior to that, he had said, we're going to do a study or an investigation and do exactly how things are handled medically and everything. And then the Astros win the World Series. You fire the GM, of course.
Right.
And it's not clear that that study was ever done. So I don't know. And that was as the team is taking a hard left turn away from the analytics at that moment.
Yeah.
And I could totally see where somehow they decided, like, nope, you just got to rub some dirt on it, and there you go.
Yes. So the Astros one game up in the division. Good news, Jason Alexander goes tonight. He's one of the few things you can count on these days. So he's going tonight against Jose Berrios for the Toronto Blue Jays. 6 o'clock start for that game. Meanwhile, with the Texans, as long as we're updating on injuries, here's D'Amico Ryans with his update on the Texans injuries from this past weekend.
Just start off, just the injury update. Stan Stover hurt his foot, so he'll miss some time. Really hate that. He's playing tough, physical, exactly how we want it done. So he'll miss some time. So we'll have to, you know, upgrade our tight end room from that perspective. Andrews rolled his ankle, so he'll be day to day. See how that goes. Berrios and Kirk are doing well on their recovery. We'll see how they go this week. No timetable set right now for those guys.
I guess the one thing set to be. It was a little surprising just based on the optics of it. Well, and look, he had a high ankle sprain. And he's a big dude, so I understand riding the cart off the field. But anytime you see somebody riding a cart into the locker room, you're like, oh wow, this looks super serious. Yeah. For Andrews to be day to day, I think was just a little surprising based on what it looked like at the time.
Yeah, we haven't learned our lesson yet. You know, going back to Kamu Grugier-Hill, that's when we really should have learned our lesson about, it's kind of like a foul in basketball. You got to ignore actually what the guy is doing after he, you know, flops to the earth and everything. Like, wait, let's analyze the actual collision itself. Likewise with injuries, let's just not jump to conclusions based on the immediate aftermath. I guess the part that concerns me now is that, Jared Patterson's, he's been pretty injury riddled, for a young player in his career.
Yes.
And Jake Andrews, we don't know how durable he is because headed into the game last week, Jake Andrews had a total of 75 snaps or so as an offensive lineman in the NFL.
Some of that's because he was injured when he was in New England.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a precarious position right now, both because of skill level, but also perhaps having a couple of injury-prone centers.
Tommy Togiai gets a one-year extension for up to $3.3 million. I'm happy for Tommy Togiai. He was a street pickup last year who has clearly the coaching staff very fond of him. D'Amico loves his consistency. My question, is he the first player to, in the same week, be a healthy scratch for a game and then get a multi-million dollar contract extension?
It's a good question. Yeah, he might be. Yeah. It might be some kind of weird. Good luck doing the research.
I don't know where to look
this
up. Yeah, I don't trust
AI. Texans Cap has a way of figuring this stuff out. I don't know how he does it. He's our who's the basketball guy that's so smart? Wiener.
Beam a Thug on Twitter. Yeah. David Weiner. Yeah.
Texans Cap has kind of become
the
Beam-a-Thug.
Football Beam-a-Thug.
How does this guy know all this weird stuff? And he just seems to be able to find it really easily.
Very useful.
Yeah, let me do a classic hot sports take, Sean.
Give it to me.
Oh, great. The extended Tommy Togi eye. Is that what's going to beat the Ravens? Yeah. Oh, that's what's going to beat the Ravens, apparently.
I don't even want to look. Yeah, I know there's somebody that replied to the tweet about that with that.
This is a little bit of kind of what Casario's done with guys like that. Brevin Jordan is a higher profile guy just because he was a draft pick and everything. But at the same time, got an extension without having a huge body of work or anything, because I think there's a combination of upside and you like the guy's work ethic and the way he operates and everything. And they very, very much like Togi Ai, and probably see that at some point, the Texans rotate a bunch of defensive linemen in throughout a game. There's going to be injuries on the D-line at some point, and he's a guy that they could totally see being very valuable at some point later on down the road.
Yeah, if it's worth up to $3.3 million, my guess is it hovers around the veteran minimum at its base, you know? So,
got some good old playtime
incentives. Yeah, playtime incentives, exactly.
You know, it used to be really good. They're not allowed to do it anymore, but the Eagles used to be brilliant at taking guys like Tommy Togi Ai, and they would have given him like a 7-year contract. You take a late round draft pick or kind of a journeyman type or an undrafted rookie free agent, and before they've ever had big money thrown at them, you're like, yep, here you go. 7 years. $5 million. That's you can just invest that wisely and you're set for life. And guys are like, hell yeah, I'll take that.
Right.
And I can't argue with them.
No.
I would have done it myself.
Yeah, back in the day.
I had a part where I was like, all right, if I can check off a box, we're like, all right, I'm not going to haggle or too much or get my ego involved here. If it's something that genuinely sets me up for life, I'm not going to worry about I need more.
Don't worry about
that with your third contract.
That's exactly right. Hey, we're trying to get new books into the hands of kids in low-income homes in Houston today. You guys know this is our annual push to get books in the hands of kids. 79% of Houston kids fall into that low-income category. 61% of them have no books in their homes. A $30 donation gives one child in Houston their own home library. It's 6 new books of their own. They get to pick the books, too. I've been at some of the events where they get to pick their books out. It's awesome. Text new books to 41444 today to donate and help us help Houston kids get books in their hands. Literacy has a big correlation with things like crime and mental health, and this is you're helping all of that just by a small donation. All donations in Morning Drive today matched by Reliant up to $10,000. So help us out. New books. Text new books to 41444. You'll get a link, and you can make your donation there. Small $30 donation gets the job done. Up next, moving on after the week one loss. D'Amico said we're moving on. I've got 3 things we need to get to before we fully move on to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We'll get to that in the 7 o'clock hour.
670 The Score's Mullin Haw is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he is here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullin Haw Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.